This is a Sports Radio 740 podcast on sportsradio740.com.
All right, welcome back in. Glad you're with us here as we kick off hour number two of the Budweiser Sports Line, brought to you by our good friends at Bama Budweiser. Remind you to enjoy their product responsibly. Up in Tuscaloosa, our man Travis Ryer with BamaOnline.com joining us on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline. Travis, good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing great, doing great. We've been talking about this for 2 days. How does a 2-win in the SEC Alabama baseball team go down to the number four team in the country and sweep 3 games, Travis? Nobody in the civilized world saw that coming. How did it happen?
I guess, you know, guys like Roberto Vaz and G.W. Keller and some of those guys still had some eligibility left that we didn't know about. That's about the only way I could describe it.
Yeah. Dave Magadan maybe came back.
Some of those guys. Mm. But I don't know. You know, it's a series that when you talk about just conference play, Alabama's really dominated of late. So maybe we shouldn't have been all that surprised. Obviously, the game there in Montgomery, Auburn is certainly had its way in
exhibition
the Capital
game,
C Classic.
Travis,
right. But when they've mattered the most, for whatever reason, regardless of how bad Alabama might be, it's just one of those weird series where they figure out a way to get it done. But a sweep in Auburn, I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, I want to make sure I use the right verbiage here. Now, what's not devastating, Barry? What's the right term here? Something about the probably one of the hardest weekends in Auburn athletics. How about that? Is that a nice way to put it? I'm not buying it. I think some football games might have been a little bit more harder to swallow, but certainly with a team that's number four in the nation and riding high, was not expecting at home to drop 3 in a row. So I can certainly see how that would sting somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about an Auburn team that had everything on the line when you look at postseason and hosting and you know, maybe that comes into play down the stretch, you know, and Alabama obviously with nothing to play for at this point. So maybe a little looser and comfortable in the situation. But, you know, there's no doubt about it. When you look over the course of the season, Auburn's been the dominant team, and you just it's baseball. If something like that's going to happen, it's baseball where it's probably more likely to happen than any other sport.
Travis, how did Alabama baseball get in the position they're in right now?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think there are a couple of potential explanations for it. Now, you know, are they 5-19 bad in terms of the roster? No, I don't think they are. Most people that are close to the program or going into the season felt like, you know, they might be as bad as a 10-win team in SEC play this year. And who knows, maybe they'll still get to 10. Still got a couple series. I think that's going to be tough with Florida coming in here this weekend and then going on the road at Vanderbilt to finish the regular season. But, you know, it's been a rough transition from Mitch Gaspard to Greg Goff. And in terms of a 180 as far as the day-to-day approach to a program, I don't know if there could have been a bigger switch than what they've undergone from Mitch to Greg Goff. Just totally different approaches, not just to baseball, but probably they line up pretty close in terms of baseball philosophy. But the day-to-day stuff, the expectations of the players, both in the program and on the field and off the field and those type of things with Greg has been a good bit different. I don't know if the buy-in has been, you know, what you would probably like to see in the first year with a new coach, but it's been a tough one. And so, you know, I think you'll see a pretty good bit of roster turnover in the upcoming off season. I think Greg's going to hit the junior college ranks very hard, try to get through the Major League Baseball draft with those guys intact for the most part. And then see what they can do in year two. But, you know, I just think that the transition again, in every imaginable way, has been, you know, a pretty tough one.
I hear the same thing. I agree with you there. Travis Ryer, BamaOnline.com. In your opinion, and you don't handle this on a day-to-day basis, but the new parameters for football signing, making an early signing period the week before Christmas, big deal, no big deal? What's the ultimate upshot of how that will go over?
You know, it's tough for me to really – I've had a tough time with this one because I can typically come up with a pretty hard and fast take on something. This is one that I'm not as strong about. I'm kind of indifferent right now. I want to see how it sort of plays out. You know, I guess as much as anything, the fact that juniors now are going to be able to start taking official visits starting April 1st of their junior year of high school, to me, that's probably the most radical aspect of it. I mean, I think otherwise we're sort of just casting opinions about, well, it's going to hurt power. It's going to hurt non-Power 5 programs. It's going to hurt the kids who, you know, might be late bloomers. It's going to hurt kids who, you know, need some time academically. I just don't know. I want to see it kind of play out in terms of the signing period itself and late December. I don't see it being a huge deal. You know, you've got so many kids that are now jumping into the mix, enrolling in January as it is. I mean, you look at Alabama, you had 15 high school kids enroll in January of this year. So it's kind of something that we were already starting to see anyway with kids enrolling in the spring semester. So I'm just kind of interested to watch it play out first and see how it goes. Again, the thing that's going to be most interesting to me is to see how schools and programs manage these official visits that can now start to take place in April instead of in the fall.
Travis Ryer, Bama Online, joining us here today. Travis, anything with the change on the basketball staff last week? There was, I guess, a move of somewhat, mm-hmm. but not a lot of talk about what was behind it.
Yeah, Bob Simon, the assistant coach, essentially didn't have his contract renewed by Avery Johnson. And so Avery, for the second straight year, looking to make a change to that coaching staff. And, you know, probably as much as anything, Antoine Petway did a great job he's done on the recruiting trail, is going to be rewarded for this. And you'll see him move up to that number two assistant spot behind John Pelfrey. And then I'm guessing they'll backfill, you know, obviously with another assistant here in the near future. But, you know, Avery hasn't been one to stand pat so far when it comes to the coaching staff. Again, each of the last 2 years, he's made some changes. But Petway's been great. I mean, when you look at this recruiting class that they're bringing in, I think you could pretty much say he had a hand in all five of those guys. So, you know, you like to see Petway rewarded for his work, but yeah, a little bit more of some change over to coaching staff.
Since you've been able to dissect the NFL draft, how do you rate how the Jags ended up?
I didn't like the pick at four of Leonard Fournette, not because I don't think Leonard Fournette can't be a good NFL back. It's just that until the Jags get their offensive line and quarterback situation figured out, I don't know if Jim Brown at 23 could run the ball in that offense. Yep. Mm. So I just felt like it was kind of a wasted pick. You know, you don't make your offensive line better by bringing in a back at four. Not at that level. You know, you have to be able to block people. I don't care who you bring in. And looking at Fournette specifically, you know, he's an impressive guy, but he's a physical specimen, as we all know. But he's not a guy that at that level is going to create a lot of yards for himself if you don't block it. You know, there are guys that can do some of that. I think Dalvin Cook of Florida State, even Christian McCaffrey of Stanford, they're more of those kind of guys that can create something out of nothing. With Leonard, as we saw the last 2 years against Alabama, if you can't give him somewhat of a free run into the hole or to the second level of the defense, his attributes get minimized a great deal. He's not a start and stop, you know, cut back, you know, make things happen for himself type of runner. He just isn't. And so, you know, again, if you put him in a situation like Dallas, like you did Zeke Elliott, then sure, I think Leonard Fournette would be great.
Well, I got two questions.
I don't think the fit's great in Jacksonville.
I got two questions then, because I'm a Jags fan too. Cam Robinson in round two at offensive tackle, in your estimation, is he just a plug-and-play guy right there?
I think he has to be for them because
well,
of what I just talked about with that offensive
line. You're right about that.
Now, I like the pick of Cam there. I think they got a lot of value there. But I hope Fournette goes for 2,000 yards next year, obviously. But
me too.
They just have issues in that offense that a 240-pound running back isn't going to fix. So, you know, even if they had traded back and just gone offensive line in the first 34 picks a couple of times, I probably would have been better with that. I like what they did beyond Leonard Fournette. I thought they did some really good things, but I just didn't get the pick of Fournette there. Not for them, anyway.
They didn't pick up the option on Blake Bortles. Are you a Bortles guy?
Not really, no. I'm definitely not for where they took him a couple of years ago. You know, they really reached, I want to say at three or something like that overall.
Yeah, they were top five.
And, you know, I understand what you see in Blake Bortles when you just look at the guy and you talk about physical attributes. But when the ball is snapped, it doesn't register with him. And so, you know, it's a tough league to play in if you can't come off your primary guy. And you're not entirely accurate. You know, that's the big thing is, you know, from day one, people that have watched that situation in Jacksonville have said, look, the guy just isn't accurate enough as a passer in this league. So, you know, I'm hopeful that maybe he turns the corner and does. He's got some weapons, put it that way. I mean, the wide receiver position is in a good spot. He's got Fournette now. But he, too, in fairness, hasn't benefited from that offensive line either.
Travis, what Alabama player that got drafted last week is going to make the quickest impact?
Gosh, I think there's a couple, but I think the most visible guy will be O.J. Howard in
Tampa.
What a
sweet situation he finds himself in, yeah.
Not because he's going to catch 80 passes as a rookie, because they've got other guys like Mike Evans, Deshaun Jackson down there now to go along with O.J. in that offense. But in terms of just the perfect fit, I think he's great for Tampa. I just think that, you know, with Jameis at quarterback and what Howard can give that offense, I would go with O.J., but, you know, I think Ruben, if that shoulder's right in San Francisco, is – a guy that you're going to hear a lot from, too. So it would be probably one of those two for me. But O.J. just seems like the perfect fit in Tampa.
He's Travis Ryer, BamaOnline.com, for all of the information surrounding Alabama athletics. That is your one-stop source. Travis, let our listeners know how they can get more involved with what you guys do there at Bama Online.
Thanks, Sean. Just go to BamaOnline.com. Or alabama.247sports.com. Either way will get you to us.
Appreciate it, Travis. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Great stuff. Travis Ryer on our Dreamland Barbecue guest hotline. Ain't nothing like them nowhere. They're world-famous ribs, sauce, white bread.